Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hello, Star Party people. It's me, Sandy, and I'm here with Bess Matassa, and we are going to talk about Taurus season. We're going to have a nice, slow conversation, and we are going to enjoy every minute of it. Right, Bess?
Oh, yeah. We've been experiencing some lags in our recording, but those lags are available for us to languish the lovely lushness of Taurus.
Love it. You're so good with alliteration. I love it.
Oh, God, I can't stop.
So, Bess, why don't you start and tell us some of your thoughts about Taurus season?
Yeah, well, I have a few, but I think a lot of them center around the sensation of the King of Pentacles. I've been working more and more actively with this card. And in my practice, I really associate this energy with Taurus and all of the kings, you know, with kind of fixed energy. And for me, fixed energy, which we've spoken about before in this podcast, has a whole lot to do with widening to the container to hold more. And I've been experiencing the King of Pentacles, you know, even if we look at visual representations of this card as a figure that's almost like covered in vines and embedded in the landscape. It's this sense, you know, that we sometimes, I think, interpret as inertia with Taurus. But really what it feels like to me is letting the world have a chance to respond to you without you having to kind of shapeshift and augment and immediately, you know, kind of go into a mode where you're doing or coming forward to the world. It's that sort of rolling back in order for the world to like roll in and be received by you. And so I think that that sensation has been just strengthening for me as we approach this particular Taurus time. And then I've been thinking quite a bit about emptying and filling, which is something I think about a lot with the fixed signs. And I think on a previous episode, it might've been an Aquarius season, I had this thing in my mind where I was like, okay, so if all of the fixed signs are about emptying and filling, like moreness and lessness, I had this kind of fancy thing where I was like, okay, so Leo and Taurus are the fixed energies that are about bringing less to more, like simplifying and as a way to kind of simplifying energy as a way to open to the moreness of the world. And then Scorpio and Aquarius about bringing more, you know, kind of more courage, more wherewithal to the experience of less, to that experience of emptying. So that Taurus and Leo were sort of more equated with the filling end of things and Scorpio and Aquarius with the emptying. And I think that's all like fine and good, but it's a little too pat and fancy now for me as I've started to really experience Taurus in its connection to emptiness too. Like I think the buildup to this particular Taurus season, you know, through Aries season, I haven't been feeling like particularly bountiful or like I'm bursting into bloom or all of these kinds of expressive spring-like, you know, kind of activated qualities. I've really still been feeling a quite like an emptying sensation. And I think I've just been noticing how quick I am to assess how much emptiness I think is a good thing. Like I keep being like, oh, it's time to pop out of this now. Like we have to fill, like there's got to be a new season on the horizon, metaphorically speaking, and all of this, and kind of rushing to push that energy in. And I've been realizing that so much of Taurus is actually that lean back to receive is also, I don't know, there's something about the organics of Taurus just emptying out without an agenda of how long that emptiness is meant to last, so that things can naturally fill. And the word natural is a complicated one, I realize, but you know, there's something about the naturalness of it without us imposing timeline on the emptiness. And then, you know, I'll try to condense this a little bit. I've been thinking quite a bit about fertility, and I don't mean, you know, fertility, you know, in a sense of having offspring or anything like that, but just the sense of fertility in our lives, like a creative generativity, just in how that changes. I think I've been in a period lately where I've been really oriented toward expecting a feeling of fertility or a flood of new inspiration, what have you, to be the same form it's always been. But I'm just realizing how much that changes over the course of our lives, that kind of cycle of creative generation, and how much of an ally Taurus can be. I think there's a certain constancy to our cycles of creative generation, but there's also an evolution and a maturation. And I've just been getting curious about that. And then I've been thinking quite a bit about Venus as a comeback kind of planet, which I'd never thought of it before. Like, I've always thought about Venus as opening and dilating to life, but also a companion through cycles of emptying and then coming back to life at the on the other side of emptiness, and sort of the regenerative power of Venus. And yeah, I think I'll leave it there for now, because I feel like I'm talking in a crazy way that maybe doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, but you're not. You always make sense. Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
When it comes out of me, I feel like when I come out of me, it comes out of me. I feel like it's a garbled craziness, but yeah,
it's being what's received. What's cool about you is that you always have like a brand new way of thinking about things. And then you always have not just that new idea, but a framework for that you've devised about it. And it's totally different from the last time we talked to you about it. And you're like, yeah, I've just always thought about it this way. I'm like, wow, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know what's going on.
I know I have a bad memory, but this is like, it's a lot of new stuff. It's fun.
Okay.
That's why, you know, we can talk about this stuff forever. So for me, I tend to stick to the same old words about each sign. And I'm always like trying to drill down into them more. And so with Taurus, I'm working on an astrology journal right now. And each sign is going to have like three themes that you really go into. And the themes for Taurus are going to be pleasure, self-worth, and security. And so I'm working on these themes, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's like when you really want, you're really asking people, hey, for this Taurus season, I'm really asking you to really think about these three themes. So I want to treat each one well, you know, I don't want to just gloss over it. So it's making me think about them more and ask more why these are my themes, you know, or why I really think about this. And the self-worth one is hard because I don't know, like lately I've been kind of over it with some of the more psychological. I mean, my whole approach to astrology is very psychological, but I think with self-worth, it's a tough one because it's like, it's what we all want, right? On a core level, it's like what helps us all is to feel really grounded and stable and feel like, oh yeah, I feel really confident in this topic, whatever it is. But it's really hard for all of us. And it's also very cyclical. Like self-worth is maybe something that comes and goes a little bit, where you're like, oh, I feel really confident. Oh, now I don't feel so confident. Or I feel really worth it. Now maybe I don't. And I think it's hard when we attach this kind of attainment goal to themes like that in our lives, where we say, well, if you only had self-worth, then you'd be doing great, you know? And it's like, we're so fluid. I just feel like all of these personal development goals, as much as I'm always interested as a Mercury and Scorpio in delving into them and thinking about them, I also have a strong part of me that's like, but also give yourself a break and don't, you're going to have it, but you're also not going to have it. Does that make sense? Like you're going to have self-worth, but not.
It's what you're saying is actually like blowing my mind in this moment. And is exactly the message I feel like I need to hear, because I think what you're getting at, you know, and I've been sort of in a period where I've been having a crisis of creative confidence, one would say. And I think there's an expectation, like you're saying, with something like self-worth and even the constancy of Taurus fixed energy, that that's always going to be the same and always available. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, we just attain it and then we've got it and it is like we either have the confidence or we don't. Mm-hmm. But you're like blowing my world open because you're reminding me that like, even in the expectation of like the fixity of certain, I don't know, like the fluidity of Taurus is actually coming through to me here in that sense of like the organic cycles of emptying and filling and like the moments where the worthiness and like, yes, maybe there's something underneath that that allows us to see the through thread of like, okay, there's an empty period here where I'm not being able to access security or self-worth or whatever it is that I think should be attainable or constant. But part of the magic of Taurus is actually in the empty space to allow it to refill, you know, like an autofill on its own organic schedule, you know, without this attainment aspect, because fixed energy is all about magnetics. It's about attraction. It's not about going and making and doing, like in the cardinal expression that we might think of that. So you're like, you're rocking my world, Sandy Citron.
It's as all usual. Coming together. It's all coming together. I love it so much. Okay, good. I'm glad that we're this is really good. And yeah, so I think like this, it was also like thinking about how Taurus comes right before Gemini and how Gemini is all about the statement, you know, I have self-worth, or I think, you know, all the things that we could say or think about ourselves, all of these like I statements or the mindset or the thoughts. And I think it's interesting that the sign that possibly rules self-worth, which might be Taurus, comes before the consciousness almost. You know, that it's like it comes before we could say, oh, I'm confident. And how there's something in that that adds to what you're talking about, where it is just this organic, I have it and I don't have it. It flows and it is and it isn't. And it's not such a fixed mindset or something. Does that make sense too? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's actually making me think of something. And maybe we've touched on it before in another Earth Season podcast episode. But I think it's that book, Eastern Body, Western Mind, you know, that tome, that sort of classic treatment of the chakra system. I can't remember. I think it's Anna Dea Judith, maybe, is the author. Mm-hmm. And at some point during, maybe it's one of the lower chakra like chapters, she basically makes a statement that says, like, there is no security to be found except in the body. Like, we think we're going to find security in the mind, but we can't, because the second the mind finds a place to land, then it alights again. It's Gemini energy. Uh-huh. It's on the move, you know? And so there is no security except for in the body. And so it's like, it's speaking to what you're saying of like, this isn't a consciousness game, like of self-worth or security, any of these principles. This is a sensation-based one and sensation shift, but we just have to sort of wait and attend for the physicality of that feeling to emerge. Like, there's nothing we can, like put on. Get it.
And that is the perfect lead into like the pleasure side of Taurus. And I know we have talked about this because I remember doing a hypnosis, I think, for this at some point, somewhere in this podcast world that we're in. But how the pleasure piece connects, and how if you just imagine yourself, you know, maybe enjoying a float in a wave pool, from there you connect to self-worth. Like, yeah, I'm worth this nice feeling of water on my skin or something. I don't know, that like, you know, it's less that mental thing and more that physical thing. So with all that being said, maybe we should go to our listener question. Or is it
I think it's time. Yeah, I think it's a really rich one. Let's see here. Let me bring it up. The other thing, I don't know if this connects, but I'm having a thought about it. I've been like kind of rethinking the way I had like one of these late night kind of things that maybe I thought was a breakthrough, but maybe it makes no sense. You know, like these things that really come to you in the middle of the night, or at least they come to me in those like always in the nocturnal hours. But I was having this feeling about houses. And I was thinking about houses as having almost a fundamentally earthy quality. And I'm talking about that like abstracted from, you know, the houses obviously have rulerships that connect them to all the different elements, you know, depending on the house. But I was always sort of like conceptualizing the houses as, you know, terrains to inhabit, like countries of learning, you know. So for example, if you have a Scorpio planet in, you know, a Gemini house, the third house, it's learning to kind of like take on the customs of that country and, you know, learning from Gemini experiences and all of that. But I've started thinking lately about the quality of like planets and houses, not just about learning to inhabit the house, but learning to leave home, like learning to leave the house and like what it means to kind of unearth in that way. Like, it's like getting comfortable, which feels like a very Taurus theme, getting comfy and like getting into the groove of the house. And then also learning to depart it once, you know, there's moments where like it's been taken on as kind of second skin. And it got me thinking in a different way. I don't know why I was thinking about that as Taurine, but I was thinking about just the idea of unearthing in Taurus too, that there's these periods of like settling into the groove of the thing. And then like you're so in the groove of it that then there's an organic, almost like emergence, almost like you've been packed in something. And then you kind of slowly like unearth. And it feels very like, you know, we're in a year where Pluto is shifting signs. And I don't know, there's a whole thing to say about that conversation with Uranus and Taurus and everything. But yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense, but there's something in that to me that feels like it wants to come through in this conversation. And it might come through in the listener chart as well.
Yeah. But it makes sense. And it's funny how everything now that comes up around Taurus, I think about my 15-month-old daughter who's a Taurus moon, and how like as a baby Taurus, you can just really see Taurus, like, and it's her moon sign. So Taurus comes through really strong. And she's just not that baby that's always like reaching out, grabbing at everything. She's letting it all kind of come into her. Then when she feels really pro at it, then she does it. You know, like it's like this slow internal development, and then she's full and she could do it, and then she can move on, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I thought of when you were talking about that. I don't know if it's
Timing. The timing aspect. It feels like it's imbues every earth sign, you know, in a different degree. We're looking at different scales of time or different, you know, knowing when to move, knowing when to, you know, hunker and settle. All right. Well, we've got a very rich question here from a Taurus sun sign listener who also has some other earthy energy in her chart. But Sandy, I did want to mention that it's kind of funny that this particular season, we got the least amount of questions that we ever had before from like Taurus sun listeners, which I think is interesting to me on a couple of levels. But the first being like, there's a kind of inherent resourced quality to Taurus that to me, it doesn't belie inquiry or curiosity, but it's sort of like a I've got what I need-ness, you know? I don't know. What do you think, Sandy, about that?
Yeah, exactly. I asked one gal in person because we have questions from all the other signs. We have like a question database. Zero Taurus. So I've been like, if I run into a Taurus, I'm like, hey, we do this thing where we answer questions and we don't have any. So if you want to submit one, like I can't guarantee we'll answer it, but you know. And this gal I was talking to was like, well, I know what my questions are, but I also already know the answers. So I don't think so. Yeah. I was like, yeah. You know, yeah.
It feels like it's actually really connected to our conversation that we had in Aquarius season too. Like there's this kind of unlikely kinship, I think, between Taurus and Aquarius in that sense. And we spoke during that season, and I've been really investigating it more, this relationship between the Hierophant in the tarot, which is connected to Taurus, and the Fool, which is connected to Aquarius. And in the Fool, we agree to open up to the unfamiliarity in the familiar. And in the Hierophant, we seek the familiar within the unfamiliar. And so there's this kind of like, I don't know, there's this quality of the whole spectrum of knowing that I think happens in Taurus and Aquarius in this funny way. Like the ability to know what is not known, the ability to, I mean, we don't need to get back into the known knowns and the unknown unknowns that we did in Aquarius season, but I don't know, I've just been feeling the connection between those signs more vibrantly lately.
That's great. Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. So our listener writes, hello, I am a mom of one and I'm looking to expand my family. My last pregnancy ended in loss, and after giving myself time to grieve and process, I finally feel ready to jump back into the muck of pregnancy and hopefully child rearing. I have been telling myself that this time around I will do everything right, eat the best, exercise, actually avoid all of the things they tell you to. But I know that I also am who I am, which is lazy and lax when it comes to most rules. And in the end, I have a feeling I will just do everything the same as last time. Will it be okay? Can I be kind to myself while accepting the uncertainty of the universe? Is it possible to trust in myself the entire time and also be human?
You're such a good reader.
I don't know.
Nice. Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah. It's nice. I like listening to your voice too, Sandy. So it's a good, yeah, we have a good, hopefully the listeners like our voices too.
I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll go first, right?
Yeah.
Take I have it away. Some thoughts. Yeah. So, first of all, I was a little teary eyed reading your question because I'm sorry, it's hard and been a hard time. So, you know, like you're going into this slowly as a Taurus should and taking your time with it as you can, you know, it's hard. So, kind of the key part of the question, it looks like, you know, can I be kind to myself while accepting the uncertainty of the universe? Is it possible to trust in myself the entire time? Also be human? You know, these are big questions I think a lot of us can relate to regardless of what's going on. You know, when we take a risk, when we're trying for something new, and how do we be kind to ourselves through that process where we tend to want to have control and we tend to want to be able to do our best and feel like we have control of our own actions and what we're doing on our side of things. But at the same time, a lot of it isn't in our control. And so what do we do about that? You know, and I was looking at the chart. I have so many things I want to say, but first of all, you have your sun opposite Pluto, which is a lot throughout the life of like, what do I control? And I want to have control, or I need to have control. And your sun is also in the eighth house in Taurus. So it's a lot of like who has control are just big themes in general. I don't know how much that relates to this here. And then I also noticed that in your chart, your moon is in Pisces is square Saturn in Sagittarius, which isn't uncommon, you know, to have something like that. You guys, or you're also having another aspect from the moon. There's a bigger pattern going on there. But with that moon square Saturn, there's a lot about the self-criticism that comes up. Any moon Saturn combination is going to bring up that self-criticism. And the tone of the self-criticism is tough, because it's very emotional. It lands in a very emotional place. And so it's hard to put a finger on even when you're being self-critical or when you're not. It just becomes very soppy and hard to even think about. It becomes very deeply emotional. And so it's easy for you to be hard on yourself, which is why you're asking, can I be kind to myself? Can I do that? You know, is it possible when this is a thing that's generally hard for me? Right? So can I be kind to myself while accepting the uncertainty of the universe? What's really neat about right now is that Saturn is transiting exactly conjunct the moon. So while in your birth chart, you're having this conversation happening between Saturn, which is the authority, the kind of cold, harsh, dry, brittle teacher, and the soft, squishy, vulnerable moon where you're like, teacher, am I doing it right? And the teacher's like, no, you could do better. Right now, that teacher has come right up to your moon again. And so this kind of combination between the moon and Saturn moving in the sky will happen every 7 years, but it's hitting you really hard right now. And it's saying, hey, it's really important that right now I figure out this whole thing about self-criticism, and I figure out how to be, you know, how to be less hard on myself, but it's also very depressing. So whenever we have Saturn conjunct the moon or Saturn opposite the moon or Saturn square the moon, I always tell clients, hey, this might be like a sad-ish kind of moment for you where you just might feel a little down. Like it's just hard. And it's great that we have astrology because we can look and see, oh, well, this is probably going to happen till like for you, it will be till about January next year, 2024, where you just might feel a little sad-ish about some things. And so it's okay to feel that. I mean, it doesn't feel good. So I'm not saying it's okay to feel that way, but you can say, oh, it's the stars. Blame Saturn, you know, like blame Saturn. It's not you. It's literally the cosmos. But it is bringing up those patterns of like, am I really hard on myself? How do I soothe myself? How do I be, am I doing a good enough job in the ways I want to? It's bringing it up, but because it's Saturn conjunct the moon, it's not giving you a lot to work with. Like, it's not very productive. It's coming up, but there's nowhere to really go with it. It's not like easy to deal with. Where you can work with it might be on some emotional level, but honestly, this specific combination is so depressing that it's even really hard to like do a lot of emotional work with it. You're just kind of stuck with it a little bit. Now, does that mean that you can't go have a wonderful pregnancy and be really kind to yourself throughout that pregnancy? No, of course you can. But just know that in the back of your mind somewhere, there is this Saturn figure, and Saturn figure is this teacher who's saying, oh, well, you might be able to do better. You might be able to work harder. And so knowing that throughout your pregnancy, you might have that voice on your shoulder kind of being like, well, you could probably do a better job. And that voice is going to hit really deeply emotionally. It's going to be like hitting your inner child a little bit and be like, oh, it's there again and I'm sad about it. So it's nuanced because, yes, you could go do all the things you want, but you might still feel the whole time like, ugh, I'm not doing it the way I want to. So you can turn around and look at that Saturn and say, hey, you've helped me a lot in the past, but right now you're not, you know, can we have a different way of talking to each other? Can you get off my back a little bit? Like, can you stop with this like nonstop kind of nagging? I don't need it right now. Right. So going into your pregnancy, you know, there are some practical things that you might want to agree to if you can. Let me see, your Mercury's in Aries. So you're not like, you're probably not the biggest thoughtful, like not, you can be a planner, of course, you're a Taurus sun, but you don't necessarily probably plan things out to the nth degree with the Mercury in Aries. You might, I don't know. But if you want to, with just a couple of frameworks about the thing with the pregnancy, I would kind of come up with a few things that you definitely want to do. If you haven't already heard of it, there's a book called Expecting Better, which is science-based. It's, what's it called? It's a statistician. You've probably heard of it. But anyway, she kind of goes through and says like, hey, this is what the real statistics say about X, Y, and Z things. And I found that book to be very grounded and helpful for determining what is actually important out of the rules. And so that might help you if you haven't already found it. So, you know, I would decide like, what are the rules that actually matter to me here and which ones don't, you know? And then you might go back and forth with some of those. But the other thing I'll say is that your moon is right on the cusp of the sixth house, which is the house of emotionally, you'd like to be very perfect in the daily life kinds of things. You'd like to emotionally be able to eat all the green smoothies and exercise 26 minutes per day, get your cardio in twice a week and your yoga twice a week. And you're like on an emotional level, you love that. But your moon is also in Pisces, which is the opposite sign, which is like, but emotionally, I just need a lot of time to myself. I need to have a lot of open time in my calendar. I need to float and drift and dream. And I don't want to be so tied to the details of life. So in general, this is kind of a tough thing for you because half of you wants to be kind of perfect with the daily life things. And the other half of you couldn't care less. So there's just like an inner conflict there anyway. So, you know, you got to kind of go with the flow a little bit. I think you can't make both halves of yourself totally happy. So don't really try, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful, but yeah, I'll let Bess jump in here and then I'll kind of back. Oh, one last thing is that your progressed moon right now, this month is opposite to your IC, which to me is that point of like creation within us, you know, that could help us create any new dreams we want to form into reality that we want to birth. And so this is a great time to be thinking about what new things do I want to bring forward? And you're kind of right on time. You also have Jupiter, the ruler of your IC, is right on your Mercury. So this is a great time to be moving forward with things, mentally at least, if not physically as well. So I think you're right on time. And that's just kind of the fine tuning of knowing that it's hard for you to be easy on yourself. It's hard for you to be easy on yourself. And like just having some grounded things you want to do and then let it kind of be fluid. Because this isn't, you don't have to control everything. You can't. So don't try. Okay, best go for it.
All right. There's so much. I'm just gonna dive right in. But Sandy, I need to book a reading with you soon.
Aww,
I need some like you have like such a you're just like your style is just like clear as a bell. Like I need like that Libra and clarity. It's just like shining. Exactly, going where the energy is needed most. I really appreciate that.
That's sweet.
So yeah, we're just in a love fest, listeners, as usual. We're in a Libra Aries love fest. All right. Yes. So the first thing I noticed, well, I noticed two things, and these might sound a little bit abstract, but in the question, there's this, you know, this call, can I still be human? And when I first looked at this chart, all I could see was the fundamental humanness. And of course, every chart is human. We're all humans. I mean, well, maybe some of us identify as otherwise or having, you know, non-human experiences. I can't speak to that. But there's such a humanizing element in this chart. And I'll specify what I mean by that. I'm looking specifically at this trinity of a Taurus sun, a Pisces moon, and a Virgo rising. And in my estimation, the Venn between these is the humanizing principle. For me in Taurus, there's this kind of organic, body-based welcoming of like the phenomenon, you know, that make up just the naturalness of, you know, like the naturalness of a craving, the moving toward and away, this very wide container for carnality. And then in Virgo, we have the veneration of all of those aspects of the body and all of kind of the aspects that make us, you know, this kind of reckoning with our capacities and our limits that happens in Virgo, and a blessing of that entirety in its specificity. And then in Pisces, of course, we're at the ultimate point of allowing the entirety of the human experience. We're at the final sign. And so, you know, and it may sound like a bit of a broad strokes abstraction, but this whole journey for you, your whole incarnation is one of deep humanizing. And so the idea of strategy, the idea of kind of an more intellectual panned out engagement, the idea of any apparatus that you take to sort of drop on to that, I think is going to feel stifling in some way, because this chart wants to move how it wants to move. It wants to go in the direction that feels good for the body, for the energy. It wants to expand that idea of the humanizing principle. So just kind of using that as maybe a context to think about the whole story here. And then the second thing I really noticed was the muddiness of this chart. And I don't mean muddy as like murky or obscure, but the reality that this chart contains a grand trine. Well, they're not by degree, but you know, a trine and of earth energies, a grand trine of the three: Taurus, the Mars and Capricorn, and the Virgo rising, and a lot of the earthy. There's a lot of commingling between earth and water here, which of course makes mud. We've got the Taurus sun in the eighth, a watery house. We've got that Pisces moon and Jupiter and Pisces. Well, Pisces moon is right on the cusp of the sixth, making that mud. We've got Mars and Capricorn down in the fourth house, a water house. And we've got the progressed moon now, which is, you know, I think at 0 degrees or early degree at the time of this, that this podcast will come out, in Cancer, in the 10th house, you know, another earthy water combination. And I started to really just get into the physical experience of that, like the muddy quality, the sort of just like kind of grooving the body down into that experience. And also to realize that, I don't know, there's a real theme of like absorption here in that sense, like the absorption of mud. Mud is something that absorbs, which I think speaks to this kind of humanizing, like absorb it, take it on, take it in. But also I think can orient you in this journey of your efforts to, you know, this dilemma that you're having between the getting it right and just wanting to be human. And I think maybe there's a call during this pregnancy or during this process of, rather than a regimen or a thing that you're, you know, a schedule or a thing to do or not to do, or, you know, this kind of one iteration of Virgo energy that can be a little bit more tweaky in particular. What if you place yourself in kind of contexts and climates that felt supportive? You know, it's like rather than regimenting a diet or looking at exactly, you know, what you're taking or calibrating, or there's more kind of chemical sort of formulaic things, What if it was about, okay, I'm going to sit in the sunlight for a few, you know, an hour a day, or I'm going to like place myself in an environmental context that feels like I can absorb a lot of healing and supportive energy from it. So really kind of capitalizing on that absorptive quality of you rather than the feeling of this strict regiment or, you know, scheduling or the kind of rule following thing. And then I was really feeling into also, and it feels like it's both inherent in your chart because you've got, you know, sun tucked into this, into the eighth house, which is a, you know, a subterranean house to a certain degree. And then also your other power center, Mars, in a subterranean place. So the idea of privacy in your own process and privacy in the way that you execute, I think is really meaningful and really important for you. There's a really nocturnal quality to this chart. And in some ways, the journey of pregnancy, and I've, you know, I've never been a pregnant person, so I don't know this experientially, but it feels to me like it's the ultimate in a private process. It's like this thing that's happening inside of your own body, your own domain, that is a really secreted and held and kind of shell-like process. And it feels like this is also doubled down through your progressed moon in Cancer at this moment, like to allow yourself for this act of creation or this journey of creation to be a secret between you and your body. It's nobody's business but yours and your body's. And almost like a whisper, almost to experience this process as like a whisper, a night context, something that's really like sealed. And to know also that you, your journey of that kind of sealing, that held quality of you is also the heldness of all of these like hierophant-like inherent resources of you. This idea of the hierophant, you know, connected to Taurus being about our fundamental truths and the absorption that's already happened. Like, what if you journeyed through this pregnancy not needing to read or solicit any new intel? Actually, it was like an inherent process of internal response. And then the last kind of like funny thought I had, for some reason, I started to think about this book, The Jane Austen Diet. It was a book that came out, I don't know, a few years back, and I never read it, but I was kind of like taken by the premise. And I think the premise is basically like someone goes back, maybe they're a sociologist, and looks at Jane Austen books and the way that the characters experienced health, like what they ate, the kind of constitutionals that they take in like open air or across the moors or whatever. And then basically like developed this regimen around it. And I think there's been, you know, stories about it as, you know, it's kind of like a part paleo diet. Like it's a lot of like very rich, you know, kind of meat heavy stuff. And then like brisk walks in nature. But I don't know. I think I was thinking about it because I think there's something so animalic and instinctual about this chart. There's just this core, this deep core of Earth. And just a reminder to yourself that this is not, once it feels like it gets into the realm of intellectual process, I think that's where you start to balk. And this, there's nothing intellectual. There needs, or not there needs to be, but there's an invitation for you to not feel like you have to be in intellectual relationship at all with this pregnancy and this unfolding. And there was this quote, I was looking actually at a review of the book last night, and there's this quote that comes out of the book. And I think it's one of the characters, I forget who it is, which Jane Austen book. But the quote is, "Nothing ever fatigues me but doing what I do not like." Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like maybe your mantra or mission statement for this pregnancy. And just knowing that you can navigate this in private process with your own body, it's nobody's business, and that you can gravitate toward the non-intellectual and trust in that. So I hope that's helpful.
I really love that. That really hits home. I suspect.
I suspect.
Yeah. And I think it's like something to hold that statement, that last mantra you shared. It's like holding it and returning to it, because that moon on the cusp of the sixth house, you know, part of the way that you soothe yourself is to like just Google one more thing. Just seek out one more Redditor's advice, you know, I don't know. you know, it doesn't pair, that strategy doesn't really pair with the moon in Pisces. It doesn't really pair with Mercury in Aries. And so to kind of, you know, let some of that go and do what Beth said, I think is great.
Yeah, get in the mud. Yeah, mud baths, yeah. And, you know, rolling around in the sheets. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Yes. So is it tarot? Beautiful. Is it tarot time? Is
tarot, tarot time.
All right. I'm going to do a one card pull, just seeing how we can seal up this conversation. Anything else that this archetype of Taurus might want to bring to the table in this moment. All right. And I'm using the Tarot of Plants for this one. Felt like it was a Taurus appropriate deck. Okay. So the card that I pull, oh shit. Okay. All right. This was like, I feel like we had this for Aries season too. We pulled the Three of Wands, which was, you know, which is an Aries inherent card. I've pulled the Hierophant, of course. So the Hierophant, which we've already invoked on this episode, you know, all these different registers of expression. And it's always interesting to me because I feel like the Hierophant often gets discussed in kind of a heady intellectual way, you know, about like belief systems and teachers. And we sometimes, like, of course there's belief systems that happen in the mental realm, but, you know, as I think we've been talking about in this conversation, you know, the most powerful way that beliefs take root is in the body, is in the repetition of habitual grooves that get, you know, whether it's accessing the only security that we can truly find within the body or what have you. And so, you know, the Hierophant to me is on one level about a lot of kind of these knee jerks and these habitual grooves and belief systems that have become so embodied and so entrenched that we're called to unearth them, you know, and kind of take a look at where they've been stored. It's that storehouse quality of Taurus. But I think it also really speaks to this idea of inherently resourced quality of Taurus. And again, this doesn't mean that you always have to feel like you're in ecstatic expressions of self-worth or that scarcity doesn't come up or anything like that. But like, I don't know, I think it speaks to this feeling of completeness in Taurus, that our body, our little life worlds that we store inside these physical forms that we transport around are so inherently rich and muddy and fertile and strange and like kind of folding in maybe this season into that and looking at what some of those inherent resources are or what some of those kinds of embodied beliefs that have been like kind of packed into your storehouse and being able to activate that sense of finding something familiar in the strange, you know, when there's uncertainty or when there's, you know, something new kind of cropping up, applying that sort of inverse from the Fool that the Hierophant is able to access in finding a, you know, oh, does this situation remind me a little bit of when I was over here? Not in order to not honor the newness of things, but, you know, a Taurus, I think one of its great strengths is that kind of recognition in the inherent, the inherently sort of packed storehouse of ourselves. Do you have a relationship with this card, Sandy?
I don't. It's one of those mystery cards to me where I just am like, I think I know what that means, but I don't really know for sure. What do you know what the astrology connection to this card is?
It's Taurus.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. You probably said that.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. No, because I was thinking like, oh, this is that Taurus card, right? Or is it? Because it's funny that it also is that heady card. So no, I don't really, I'm out of my depth with a lot of the tarot stuff. But it is fascinating. I think when, before we started recording, I was like, I think I'm going to talk about Taurus being a mountain. And how Taurus is just the mountain, and it's just like the bedrock, and it's the groundedness, and it's the kind of like from that solid base, you can well up with, you know, this abundance. And I decided not to end up talking about that, although I do think that's a good visual. And that's kind of how this card feels to me in a way, is like that solid structure base, and, you know, but maybe it can get too entrenched.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm now having this, whatever, this is maybe like a rabbit hole that doesn't need to be gone down, but because this is the Tarot of Plants, which It's a really beautiful deck. You can check it out. I think you can find it online somewhere. But each of the cards has a specific plant that comes to symbolize it. And I know very little about plants and that aspect of the natural world or herbalism or anything like that. But I just Googled the plant that's on this particular card for the Hierophant, and it's Datura. I think that's how you say it, which I know can be like poisonous in some contexts. But, you know, I'm just reading about some of the psychoactive uses of it. And it says here that there's... a Native American group, the Southern Paiute, I'm not sure if that's the correct pronunciation of that, but believing that Datura can help locate missing objects. And there's something really interesting to think about that in the context of Taurus, like this unearthing, that there's something inherent, there's something already stored in this energy of this archetype. And how do we relocate it? How do we kind of unearth it for ourselves or bring it up from that storehouse? That this energy is one of receiving, and it's one of also like recovering in some way. What's already been given to us, like what's already inside of our bodies in some way. I'm thinking of that like John Mayer song, "Your Body is a Wonderland." Is that John Mayer? I don't know.
Don't remember, I'm really bad at that game.
Yeah. No, yeah. "Your body is a wonderland, let me use my hands." That's the lyric.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the Taurus season. Call to arms is "Your body is a wonderland, use your hands."
Amazing.
Yeah. All right. Amazing. Well, listeners, we've sniffed it, we've tasted it, we've rolled around in it, and we hope that wherever you are, you're feeling a connection to your own sense of worthiness here and inherently resourced self. And we will find you in the butterfly net of Gemini season.
Thanks for joining us. If you want to ask a question about your own chart, you can do so at starpartypodcast.com/question. And visit my website, that's sandycitron.com, for courses and mini readings and regular astrology readings. I'll be doing one question readings on new moons and full moons. So sign up at my website, sandycitron.com. And Bess Matassa's website is bessmatassa.com. We'll see you soon.